You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The United States government has been delaying the naturalization applications of thousands of immigrants, according to a recent report by the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice. Joining me now for today's first underreported segment are Smita Narula, Assistant Professor of Clinical Law and Faculty Director of the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice at the NYU School of Law. Also, Mohammed Razvi, Executive Director of the Council of People's Organizations in Brooklyn. And I'm very pleased to welcome them both to Underreported. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Whose applications are being delayed?
Well, broadly speaking, the Department of Homeland Security statistics or information that they release tell us that the delays are quite widespread, and over 41,000 individuals at least have waited more than 3 years since filing in 2001. More specifically, we believe that there is a disproportionate impact and burden on what we call the profiled group, which is immigrants who are Muslim or who are perceived to be Muslim on the basis of their name or their national origin.
So if you have a name like Muhammad, you're less likely to.
Yeah, exactly.
It started out sometime in after 2001, after the attacks. We started receiving calls, and we started receiving individuals at our immigration clinics pertaining to these types of backlogs and checks.
Now, you said up to 3 years. Mm-hmm. Does federal law require that the U.S. government accept or deny an application within a certain time period?
It does. Federal law requires the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services to grant or deny citizenship within 120 days of an applicant's examination or their in-person interview and civics test and English test. In addition, the USCIS, which is the acronym, has set a policy goal of processing applications from start to finish within 6 months.
So what's happening here? Is the United States breaking its own laws?
Clearly it is. And it's doing so, surprise, surprise, in the name of national security. And the reason is that the backlogs actually started back in 2002 when about 2.7 million names were shunted back to the FBI for additional checks. And one of the things that's happened in the much broader sort of conflation of counterterrorism and immigration policies since 9/11 has been an expansion of the FBI name check process, in which individuals are subject to two vast electronic databases. And if your name even resembles some of the names in there, then you might be stuck for years and years waiting for security clearance.
But I can imagine any number of listeners saying right now, well, you know, this sounds bad, but it's important to find out if people who want to become U.S. citizens have problematic backgrounds.
Well, most importantly, these individuals already went through, you can say, almost 5 years of holding a green card and participating in the, you know, in the civic participation. They're trying to do that now, actually. And they went through everything. They went through all the checks that they are supposed to. There's one particular individual who went through who wants to join the police department. And the police department cleared him, yet he's being denied also.
And do you think this is simply sending a message, or is there something else going
on
here?
Well, I don't think it's just sending a message. I think there is something else going on, but it is just another bureaucratic way to disenfranchise these individuals. And I think that's what's going on at the moment.
So what tends to happen? Do people submit their papers and then just find themselves waiting a much longer time than they expected?
They do. And in fact, a number of the applicants that we interviewed for our report with COPPA's assistance just kept telling us again and again that they go to Federal Plaza, they make phone calls, they inquire about their application. And one person put it very poignantly. He said, they only have two words for us, security check. That's it.
And so that's what they say. They say, what's happening? And they're told, security check. And then they say, as Mohammed points out, well, I've been cleared by the New York City Police Department.
Exactly.
They're willing to hire me. What kind of security check are we talking about?
So this is part of the problem is bureaucratic kind of mismanagement. A lot of people have pointed to the fact that not only are way too many people triggering these hits for reasons of just having some kind of resemblance to names in a database that itself is not a database of suspected terrorists. It's a database of individuals who themselves were profiled through the special registration program from 2002 or in other means. And beyond that, they're now being subject to kind of manual checks or that looks at fragmented intelligence information. And to going back to your earlier question of what listeners must be thinking, well, you know, we agree that national security is a primary objective of the government, but does it really serve those interests to take years to figure out whether somebody is a threat and keep them in the country in the meantime? It's actually undermining their objectives and diverting a lot of law enforcement resources, which the Ombudsman of the Citizenship and Immigration Services has stated himself.
Who's doing the background, these checks? Is this Homeland Security? Is this Immigration?
The FBI is the one who's doing the checks.
FBI is the one who's doing the checks.
So is it a backlog problem?
It's a backlog problem and resource problem. That's what they're telling us as well, that they don't have enough resources to, you know, to fill in all these backlogs to get them done, get the paperwork done. But we're also finding out that individuals, when they go to the INS, and one of the cases here in the report states that when we ask the INS what's going on, they said, oh, it's the FBI has to make a check, and they're saying FBI is as if it is God. And it was just astonishing that to hear an INS agent say the FBI is like God.
Now, let's say I'm looking for, I'm trying to get my papers. I want to become a citizen. Leonard Lopate, born in Beirut, Lebanon. Now, my name doesn't sound like a Muslim name, but I come from Beirut. My parents were teaching there when I was born. Am I likely to go through this just as somebody whose name is Muhammad?
Not at all. I mean, chances are you're gonna go right through.
I wonder about that because part of this is also national origin based, and the special registration program in 2002, in which non-citizen males from 25 countries were asked to step forward and register with the government so that their movements could be tracked. 93,000 men stepped forward. 24 out of 25 of those countries were countries with predominantly Muslim or Arab populations. And rather than ensuring some kind of national security objective, the end result of that registration program was mass deportations and detentions on technical violations, and not a single person was charged with a terrorism-related offense. So I actually think somebody from Lebanon would trigger heightened scrutiny.
But not somebody from Ireland, Mexico, China, Finland?
I think Ireland and Finland perhaps not, but as we know, immigrant communities of color beyond the communities that we're describing have often been subject to more harsh immigration standards than others. And
absolutely,
the broader point also is that this is, of course, part of broader immigration issues that need to be reformed in a democratic way and in a rights-based way.
Well, are certain human rights protections owed the citizen applicants?
In fact, they
even
are.
Even though they're not citizens?
Yes. And the U.S. has ratified two of the key international treaties under which non-citizens are guaranteed basic rights. That's the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination and the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And collectively, under those conventions, non-citizens are guaranteed the right to non-discrimination, as well as access to certain social services without discrimination, and also rights such as the right to freely profess and practice their religion, to freedom of movement. The discrimination piece is particularly chilling, and that's what we found in our report, because it's not just, if it is a resource issue, that's one thing, and then more resources should be investigated. But we wanted to kind of broaden the scrutiny also on the discriminatory policy that's being institutionalized when somebody's name or national origin is considered reliable intelligence to kind of trigger this heightened scrutiny. And that's what we found very problematic with what's going on with all of these kinds of profiling processes.
My guests are Smita Narula, who's assistant professor of clinical law and faculty director of the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice at the NYU Law School, and Mohammed Razvi, executive director of COPO, the Council of People's Organization in Brooklyn. And we are talking about delays in naturalization, the naturalization process. Mohammed, what are you hearing from the people who come to you?
Frustration and very concerned. Many individuals are even, you know, concerned about their families because they don't try to visit them because they're afraid that they might be left out or they won't be let back in. And they're waiting, and they're patiently waiting and waiting, but it's very you know, it's very frustrating for them to just wait without any answers.
Does it make the process go any more quickly if they dress in westernized ways? Sikhs not wearing their turbans, Muslim men shaving their beards, women not wearing headscarves?
No, not at all. Not at all. This is all the paperwork process where the applications are submitted and so forth.
I think you're raising a broader issue, though, which is that there's also been a lot of both acts of public and private profiling since 9/11 targeted against individuals who are either Muslim or, like Sikhs, who are perceived to be Muslim because of their turbans.
And Sikhs are not Muslims. It's a whole separate religion.
It's a separate faith. And it is the impact that we're seeing more broadly beyond the naturalization applications is that individuals are starting to curtail the extent to which they pray or worship in public, or some have even gone so far as to change their name, the very hallmark of one's individual identity, or change how they dress so that they're not publicly profiled and subject to things like employment discrimination or hate crimes by individuals just publicly.
We did ask if it was possible to have somebody who'd gone through this to be part of this program, and we were told that everybody's afraid.
They're very afraid. They're very afraid because, I mean, one of the individuals whose case has been taken up by Cyrus and Cyrus Mehta, who's another attorney who's working with our organization, basically, when someone files a case against the federal government for these delays, they're already put on scrutiny. You know, they're being brought under a magnifying glass. So every single detail, they want to check on them now.
Well, why is U.S. citizenship so important to these people you're speaking with?
Oh, most importantly, they want to participate in the political process. They want to get better jobs, and especially getting into the law enforcement. They want to get into that.
Do people ever just get fed up and give up and go back home?
No. Most of the people, they stay and they wait.
Well, how hard is it to stay on when you're illegal? Are you considered illegal when
Well, these individuals are not illegal. These individuals actually passed. They are green card holders, and they have passed the citizenship test. And they're told, oh, you have congratulations. You've passed the test. Now you have to wait for a background check.
And that, I'm assuming, is through computer programs or checking, double-checking through databases and the like.
It's various types of checks that they do.
Do we know how often these kinds of delays occurred before 9/11?
The backlogs have really begun to, I think, deepen and become much more prolonged since 9/11. We've also seen reports that even though whereas the overall backlogs might be shrinking somewhat, anybody who triggers a hit in these databases will still be subject to prolonged delays. And we've spoken to individuals who've been waiting 3, 4, 5 years, and that's certainly far beyond the 120-day statutory requirement.
And I'm sure there are certain names that pop up again and again. There are some very common names
in
every ethnic group.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And in Islam, I mean, I can just imagine what happens if your name is Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a famous boxer, you're going to have a really hard time getting through this process.
I'd be concerned that Muhammad Ali himself would have a hard time these days, even at airports where they have this no-fly list now, which also is populated with 44,000 names since October 2006.
So is there anybody they can complain with and get any action from? Go ahead, both of you.
Well, there have been some individuals have taken their cases to court because once the 120-day period has expired, they have the right to pursue court action and seek an expedite on their case.
And how are the courts acting?
Some of them actually very well, and some individual cases have moved through. There's also some class actions that have been filed for that includes other immigrant communities, not just the communities that we are discussing in our report. But beyond that, there's been very little transparency on the part of the FBI or the Department of Homeland Security or Immigration Services to tell them the length of the delay or give them any more information except for those two words, security check.
And absolutely. And once these cases are cleared, then that'll be an example for other cases to get resolved. And that's what we're going to be focusing on.
Now, how do you find out if you're on a no-fly list? You wind up at the airport, you show up at the airport to go on vacation, and you discover suddenly that you're not going to be allowed on the plane?
Yeah, there's the government is not revealing the names. I think 60 Minutes was able to obtain a copy and did a report on it some time back. And there, too, you have to kind of question the logic behind this. There's before 9/11, there was a list of about 16 names of individuals who were considered suspect and barred from international travel. That list now contains 44,000 names. And in addition to Muslims or those from particular countries being stopped, I think once Senator Ted Kennedy was stopped, babies have been stopped. And so there's no birth date. There's even just similarities in names will trigger it.
Now, Ted Kennedy is a dangerous name?
Apparently, it triggered a red flag in the no-fly
list. Well, actually, it's Edward Kennedy. That's
right.
The problem. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Smita Narula, Assistant Professor of Clinical Law and Faculty Director of the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice at the NYU School of Law. Also, Mohammed Razvi, Executive Director of the Council of People's Organization in Brooklyn. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much
for having
us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.